So let's talk about slavery this morning. You know, where a master owns a person, where the master can tell that person what they can do and what they can't do, where they can go, where they can't go. The master can order the slave to do some activity, and the slave has to do it. They have to obey because they are a slave, and they have a master. The master has full control and is in full power, and the slave, they're stripped of their liberties. Now, slavery has been frowned upon in America for, 200 years. It's not right for one person to have mastery over another, to make a slave out of one person. So we did away with slavery of sorts. We still have slavery in America. It's alive and it's well. I want you guys to think about that and just kind of set that over here. I just wanted to kind of crack the book open. We're going to come back to that subject. Can you do that with me? Can you take that idea of slavery, being alive and well in America, and just kind of, okay, we'll come back and get that. You see it? Is it there? Okay. So let's talk about slavery in Egypt or Israel. Slavery in Israel, back, way back. And it's hard not to talk about slavery in Israel without mentioning Egypt. That's where that just slipped out a few minutes ago. So it's hard not to talk about slavery in Israel without mentioning Egypt. The time when, Moses' story. You guys know Moses' story, right? And Moses and the 10 plagues and the parting of the Red Sea. Well, that all started back when Joseph, who was one of Jacob's sons, he was a favorite, coat of many colors. You guys remember that? And his brothers just, they hated him. They didn't like him. So they plotted. They were going to kill him. And then Judah spoke up. And he said, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all," I love this, "let's not kill him. Let's sell him. After all, he is our brother." I mean, really, we wouldn't want to kill him. "He is our own flesh and blood," is what they said. And the brothers agreed. I think this is hilarious. "You know, you got a point there, Judah. We shouldn't kill him. We'll just sell him. That's the right thing to do because he's our brother after all." So Joseph was sold into slavery and he ends up going to Egypt, and just a mess of ups and downs ends up to where Joseph is basically, he's running Egypt. He is, he's working with the Pharaoh. He's second in charge, but he does so well that Pharaoh says, "You know what? You run the country. You got it covered, and I'll just sit back and take the credit for it." And so that's what happened. He was in good there. And so Egypt, through Joseph and the Pharaoh and God, they avoided a famine that came on the land. The Pharaoh had a dream. The dream needed to be interpreted, and Joseph had this dream deciphering gift from God. And so Joseph deciphered the dream for Pharaoh, and together they planned and they organized so that Egypt could survive this famine that couldn't be predicted by human standpoint. It was predicted by God. And so Jacob, which is Joseph's dad, and all of his brothers, the guys that sold him into slavery instead of killing him, because after all, he is our brother. Jacob hears that there's food in Egypt during this famine. And so he sends a few of his boys up to Egypt to see if they could get some food to get them through the famine. Well, there's a longer story there that happens, but to kind of condense that a little bit, they didn't recognize Joseph, but Joseph recognized them. After a few visits and a few little different things that Joseph did, he ends up revealing himself to his brothers and then moving the whole family, which that whole family was Israel. Those of you guys who know, Bible, scholars, Jacob was also called what? Israel. That was his name. He was Jacob, and God changed it to Israel. And so the nation of Israel came from Jacob and his boys and this family. So really this young nation came and moved to Egypt to survive the famine. So years pass, and Joseph dies. And the Israelites, which is Jacob's family, they just continue to grow and grow and grow, and they become just numerous. And there's a new king, a new Pharaoh, and he's in charge of Egypt. One that didn't know about Joseph, didn't know the relationship. And so the Egyptians made the Israelites their slaves. Now, they were not slaves because of anything they had done. Now, you could say, well, it was the brother's fault because they sold the brother into slavery. But really, if you look at just right there at the scene of what happened, they weren't slaves because of anything they did. Joseph was not being treated as a slave. He was running the country. They came there and they were cared for as Joseph's family, and they grew. And the Israelites that were there, they were slaves because the Egyptians saw that they could use them. They could take advantage of them. So they were made slaves under an uncontrollable situation or an unavoidable circumstance. And many of you know the rest of the story. We're told that the Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. And so God raises up Moses. And Moses frees the Israelites from slavery. And so God set them free. Now, this wasn't the last time the Israelites were slaves. Far from it. These guys habitually became slaves. And for the most part, from this time on, most, if not every time after this, they became slaves, it was because of their own fault. It was because of something they did. It was a bit different from the slavery they experienced in Egypt, where it really wasn't their fault. They were the cause of it. Now, I want you guys just to pay attention, just in case you're thinking, okay, where's this guy going? We're going to spend a lot of time here talking about slavery in Israel. Then we're going to come back to that first topic I brought up, and we're going to mix them together. So, and then we'll take some notes. So don't even worry about worrying about your bulletin or taking notes. Just kind of listen up, and we'll kind of walk through this little bit of history of Israel and slavery. So another time, well, actually all through the book of Judges, you can read a different story after story where the Israelites, they did evil on the side of God, and God let them get taken over, and they became slaves. And then after they were slaves, and they cried out to God, and God freed them, and this happened over and over and over again. We get to chapter 10 in Judges, and we see this word in verse 6, again the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. They served the Baals and the Asheroths, the gods of Aram, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the Ammonites, the gods of the Philistines. And because, I mean, they were just serving a lot of gods. There's a lot of them listed there. God said, I am one God, you will worship me only in the Ten Commandments. And here they were worshiping these gods, and these gods, and these gods, and these gods, and those gods, and these gods. Not good. And because the Israelites forsook the Lord and no longer served him, now you need to listen to this stuff and start filing it away. Who forsook who? The Israelites forsook God. That's a hard word. Forsook him. They forsook him. They forsook God. It wasn't the other way around. File that away. We're going to need that later. They forsook him. They no longer served him. He became angry with them. He what? Sold slavery. He sold them into the hands of the Philistines and the Ammonites, who that year shattered and crushed them. Sounds like you need to read that like a news reporter, you know, with a smile on your face. Shattered and crushed them. So then the Israelites cried out to God. And God was sick of it. We get a chance to read this here. Verse 10, it says, the Israelites cried out to the Lord, we have sinned against you, forsaking our God and serving the Baals. The Lord replied, when the Egyptians, and this is, he goes through a little brief history here. When the Egyptians, the Amorites, the Ammonites, the Philistines, the Sidonians, I'm butchering that word. You can't pronounce it either, so don't laugh at me. The Amalekites, the Moabites, oppressed you. And so God just goes through this big list. When all these people oppressed you, when all these things happened, and you cried out to me, I saved you. Didn't I save you from their hands? Don't you remember that? But you have forsaken me and served other gods, and I will no longer save you. Done. Have you ever had that parent conversation with your kid? I've had enough. I've stepped in. I've helped you enough. You're on your own. You made the decision. Live with it. So God says, I love this. It's. I love it when he's saying it to someone, not me. But go and cry out to the God you've chosen. Turn to them. Let them save you when you're in trouble. But the Israelites said to the Lord, we have sinned. Do with us whatever you think best, but please rescue us now. Then they got rid of the foreign. Then, did you pick up? Then they got rid of the foreign gods. That would have been something to do before you went crying out to God. Seems like they got the order a little mixed up. But they kind of woke up. They said, okay, we're going to get rid of the foreign gods. So they got rid of the foreign gods among them, and they served the Lord. Even though they were still slaves, they still did what was right. File that away. Even though they were still slaves, they still served the Lord. They still got rid of their foreign gods. They still got rid of their idols. And he could bear Israel's misery no longer. And if you continued reading, you'd find out that God raised up another man and he freed the Israelites again. So they cried out to God and he freed them. They got rid of their idols. God raised up a man to free them. Now, if we fast forward even more years, we get to the nation of Israel, and it splits into the northern and southern kingdoms. And the northern kingdom gets into a time where they just had turned away from God. They kind of had some back and forth times, but then it got to where it was pretty consistent, where they had completely turned away from God. The Assyrians came through, and God allowed Assyria to take over the northern kingdom of Babylon, or the northern kingdom, I'm getting ahead of myself, the northern kingdom of Israel. And so the southern kingdom was still hanging in there. And so then after Assyria came in, then Babylon came in, and Babylon wiped out everything that the Syrians owned and took over everything that the Syrians had. And so, actually for you guys, it'd be this way, maybe. But then the southern kingdom of Israel, they turned away from God and turned towards idols, and God allowed Babylon then to invade and take them over. And that was during the time of like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's when they were taken off into exile, and they were made what? Slaves. They were made slaves again. Now Babylon then was taken over by Persia. And then during Persian rule, the Israelites got a chance to return to their homeland to rebuild it under the leadership of Bible college student, or Bible, not college, but Bible scholars, who led them into the rebuilding of Jerusalem. There you go, Nehemiah. Nehemiah. I was trying. So in the 9th chapter of Nehemiah, the history is recounted of all these times when God saw the Israelites suffering, and he saw them suffering in Egypt, and he heard their cry, and he freed them from slavery, and he had the 10 plagues, and the parting of the Red Sea, and he took care of them, and he fed them with quails and manna, and just all how God took care of them. And then verse 16, he says, "But they, our forefathers, became arrogant and stiff-necked and did not obey your commands. They refused to listen and failed to remember the miracles you performed among them. They became stiff-necked and in their rebellion appointed a leader in order to return to their" what? File this all away. You got to remember all this stuff. I know it's a lot to remember. But they wanted to go back to their slavery after they were free. They wanted to go back to their slavery. "But you are a forgiving God, gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love. Therefore, you did not desert them." Remember, they forsook him, but he did not desert them. "Even when they cast for themselves an image of a calf and said, 'This is your God who brought you up out of Egypt.' Or when they committed awful blasphemies." And then the history just continues. If you were to read chapter 9 of Nehemiah, you just track through all this different history that goes on, and how time after time that they turned away from God. God allowed them to get taken over by the enemies, and they became slaves. And then they cried out to God, and God had compassion on them, and he freed them. And the section of Nehemiah just keeps going and going and going. And they recognize that their slavery in Babylon was because of their own choices. It was because of what they had done that led them in. They had turned away from God, and so they became slaves. See, verse 36, it says, "But see, we are" what? "Slaves today. Slaves in the land you gave our forefathers so that they could eat its fruit and the other good things it produces. Because of our sins, its abundant harvest goes to the kings you placed over us." So I get this. I wish I could remember all this when we get to the second part, but I don't have enough time to preach it, so try and remember all this. All right, so they're in the land that belonged to them, land that they should be able to enjoy the fruits of and everything that's good that comes from it, and they should be able to enjoy that. But instead, they're having to give what the land produces to their masters. File that away. "They rule over our bodies and our cattle as they please. We are in great distress." So they all vowed to return to the Lord. In chapter 10, you see this vow, and it's a pretty long vow, but the basic gist of it is It's on two basic principles. And one is that they're going to set themselves aside again. They are going to sanctify themselves or make themselves holy. To set aside is what those words mean. They're going to set themselves aside. They're going to do this by not giving their daughters in marriage to anyone other than Israelites. They're going to go back to doing that. They're going to only do business with Israelite to Israelite. And so they're going to bring things back to where they are set aside again. And then the second part is that they are going to give the first fruits back to God. They're going to take the first of their work, the first of their labor, they're going to give it back to God to reestablish that understanding that God is their Lord. He is first in their life. And so they do that. And they say, and the first fruits were to go to the use in the temple, to keep the temple up, to support the temple. And they say, we will not neglect the house of our God. And so this is how the Israelites then return to Jerusalem 300-400 years before Jesus was born in Bethlehem. So now we have all this history of slavery in Israel. Let's go back to this concept, this idea of how slavery is alive and well in America in 2013. Many of you are slaves today. When you say, I'm free, I live in the land of the free. You claim that you're free, but you are not. You are a slave. Read this with me. Proverbs 22, verse 7 says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's what? Slave. Now, if you're taking notes, go and pull your bulletin out. I encourage you to take notes. Let's just fill that verse in. Finish that verse in your bulletin. The borrower becomes the lender's slave. Any of you have been through any Dave Ramsey stuff or listened to him on the radio? You've heard this verse time and time again. How many of you guys are in debt? How many of you guys have a debt? Yeah, I figured this service would have a lot of hands up. Car payment, house payment, credit card balance, student loans. If you've borrowed money, then you are a slave to the lender. You might think that you're not. You might think that you're free, but you have a master. Your debt tells you what you can and cannot do, doesn't it? It tells you where you can and cannot go. It tells you what you need to do, and you have to obey it because you're a slave. The master has full control. The master has full power, and the slave is stripped of his liberties. See, slavery is alive and well in America. Now, just like the Israelites, we're slaves for one of two reasons. Either one, we're slaves because of our sin, because we've gotten ourselves there, or we're slaves because of an unavoidable circumstance. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at slavery in Israel, because if being in debt is truly slavery, and that's what the Bible says, so I'm not going to argue about that. If you guys want to argue with God, you can take that up with him later. But right now, we're just going to go on what God's word says. And if you're in debt, you're a slave to the lender. So I want to look at, if this is how the Israelites and God dealt with slavery, then I bet you there's a whole lot of stuff here that we can apply to ourselves in our slavery to debt. So we need to ask ourselves the first question, am I in debt in slavery because of the love of money? And we got to be honest with that, church. It's a tough, tough question to ask. Are you there because of your own sin? Are you a slave because money has become your God? Are you a slave? Are you in debt because of greed? Because you just had to have what you couldn't afford simply because you wanted it. You got your needs and your wants confused. Because you saw something you wanted and you said, I need it. I gotta have it. I hear this from my kids every Saturday morning. Those guys are just brutal with their commercials. Saturday morning cartoons, and my kids are watching that every commercial. I need that. No, no, you don't. That's garbage. It's cheap. I need it. You know, we're no different. And we need to look in the mirror sometimes and realize we do the same thing. You've gotten something in your life for security. Maybe it's a bigger house to make you feel more secure. A sportier car to help your image, to help your self-image, to make you feel better about yourself, or a bigger TV. Because for a lot of you, that's why you're in debt. You're in debt because of your own choices. You're in debt because of your own sin. You are a slave to it. And so, what did Israel do? What did Israel do when they were slaves and it was their own fault? Let's take some notes. They cried out to God. When they were sincere about it, they cried out to God. God, I need help. I need some help getting out of this debt. You know, some of you guys, you're drowning in debt. Some of you are in debt and you start to climb out of debt and then you run back into it, just like the Israelites. They got a leader that would lead them back into slavery. That's smart. But don't we do the same thing? All the stuff we were sharing earlier, all of it applies to this idea of debt and slavery. So they cried out to God. They got rid of their idols and worshiped God even if they saw no change. Remember that story from Judges chapter 10? God said, you're trusting in those idols. Keep trusting in those idols. I'll leave you to trust in those idols. You need to get rid of the idols. Some of you are wanting some sort of change in your life, but you're not willing to make change. Some of you are in such a situation where you're drowning in debt. You need radical change, but you're not willing to make radical change. And I tell you, you're not going to get radical results without radical change. You need to get rid of the idols. For some of you, it might be your house. Some of you have too much house for who you are or who your family is. You've got just square foot after square foot, and it's huge, and it's killing you. It's burying you financially and health-wise, spiritually, emotionally, your family, everything, because you're trying to keep up with a mortgage that's too big for you. Get rid of the idol. Just take the advice of what the Israelites did. Get rid of the idol. Get into something smaller, something that's a smaller mortgage payment, less to heat and cool, so you're paying less electricity, less gas. Get rid of the idol. Some of you, it's a car payment. Some of you guys have a $400 or $500 car payment. And if you can afford that, then go for it. Love it. Enjoy it. Be blessed with the money that God has blessed you with, if you can do that safely and not love money. But if you're sinking and you're drowning in debt and you're trying to keep up with a $400 a month car payment, get rid of the idol. Get rid of the car. Get a $200 a month car payment. Double the amount of money that you're being able to save from that. So get rid of the idols. Some of you guys got some idols you need to get rid of. Clear out the house. Get rid of some things you need to get rid of. Sell things. It's radical. And none of this, this is stuff you hear from Dave Ramsey. This is stuff just straight from how slavery was dealt with the Israelites as they returned to God. You got to get rid of that which caused you to fall into debt in the first place. Get rid of it. Pursue God's holiness and purify your heart. This comes from the section in Nehemiah we talked about where they set themselves aside. If you got a problem with drowning in debt and it's because you love money, you need to switch things around. You need to change your psychology. You need to set yourself aside and pursue God's holiness and watch that clean your heart up. Watch it clean your mind up. A good way to do this, a very practical way in Scripture, is to give your first fruits to God. Give the first part of your income to God. That's where the tithe came from. 10% off the top, give it to God. And what that does is it's great psychology. I mean, from someone that I love studying psychology, for that's just great. Take away the religious side of it for just a moment. I mean, that's so important. But take that away for a moment. If you're trying to reprogram your mind into thinking and doing and acting differently, this is just genius. Because if you're going to give on a regular basis, it's changing your heart from being me related to being generous. That's part of the cure in getting rid of this love of money. You need to learn how to be generous, to be content with what you have. Another thing it does is if you're regularly giving on a regular basis, it teaches you the discipline of setting a little bit of money aside every paycheck. So if it's the first fruits and you're giving God the first fruits, then you're taking 10%, you're setting it aside. And it starts getting you into this practice of, oh, that's how you save money. That's how you get ahead. It's just genius. Then you bring in the whole spiritual aspect, and it's awesome. It's amazing. So give of the first fruits. That will confirm to yourself that the Lord is your God, and it helps you to begin responsible, generous financial habits. Now, I understand that there are times in your life when you fall into debt, and it's because of a circumstance or situation that's out of your control. The proverb still stands true. You're still a slave because you're still in debt. But it's not because of something that you could have controlled. Maybe you lost your job. Maybe you came across a large medical expense that you're just drowning in it. Maybe it's because you had a life emergency. Maybe it's just because of ignorant mismanagement. You can fix ignorance. You can't fix stupid, but you can fix ignorance. And sometimes that's honest. It's not because you loved money. It's just because you didn't know how to handle it well, and you made some bad choices. I'd kind of put that in between the unavoidable. You know, you have to learn somehow. And if you weren't taught, you're going to learn that way. So I'm putting that in the category where you're not in love with money. You just made some bad choices, and now you're going to learn from it. So if you're in debt because of that reason, you need to ask yourself, am I in debt slavery because of unavoidable circumstances? And that's the position the Israelites were in when they were slaves to Egypt. It wasn't their fault. They were there, they were slaves. So what did they do? And this is real simple, and it's going to seem too simple for a lot of you, but you cry out to God, same thing that you do if it's your fault. I mean, that's a great first place to start. You cry out to God, and then you shore up, you work hard, and you wait for God's deliverance. That's what this whole series is about. For 8 months, we're talking about faith, 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 simply faith. This series right now we're in, it's called Loading. And the idea of loading is that internet symbol when it's on there and you're just waiting for the page to load. And this whole series, every sermon's about the times when faith is tough, the times when faith takes time. And if you're drowning in debt, it's not an overnight solution. It's going to take time. And you're going to watch that symbol, that loading symbol, for years. But you just got to keep with it. And if you're in a situation where it's not your fault, it was an unavoidable situation, then you cry out to God, and you don't stop working. I mean, the Israelites, they were slaves, but they still worked. They made their work harder for them, and they still succeeded at the work. They still worked hard. So you keep working hard. Shore up, work hard, and wait for God's deliverance. And just keep depending on God. Keep depending on God. See, it's easy in that situation to fall into the love of money. If you didn't get there because of the love of money, you need to protect yourself, because sometimes it's easy to fall in the love of money while you're there, because sometimes you think to yourself, well, this is awful, the situation I'm in, I had all these medical expenses, I'm way in debt. You know, if I could just get more money, that would be my solution. See it? See it creeping in? If Satan getting to get you on the one side, he's going to try and get you in on the other side. It's not about needing more money. It's about having more faith and waiting for God. And God's going to provide for you. He's going to bring a deliverance. Sometimes his deliverance isn't more money. Sometimes his deliverance is being wise with the money you have. Maybe that's the deliverance that God is bringing to you. I had someone first service come up to me and they said, you know, I was looking at my tax returns and I noticed that I ate out a lot. As they were kind of going through, you know, itemizing their things. And they said, I realized I ate out a bunch. And if I just would eat out less, I'd have more money. That's deliverance through wisdom, not more money. Sometimes deliverance from God comes through getting rid of the idols when you're on that side of things, when you're in love with money, and the deliverance is not going to come through a bigger paycheck or winning the lottery. You know, if I could just win the lottery, my problems would be over. Sometimes the deliverance is in God helping you, freeing you from your worship of idols, your worship of material things. And you get rid of those things, the big house payment, the big car payments, and that's how you receive deliverance. Deliverance comes in all sorts of different ways. I want to share a verse with you here real quick. Hebrews chapter 13. Some of you, a lot of you are very familiar with the second half of this verse. In fact, let's do this. Let's go backwards. Let's go to the second half of the verse. I think you got them split up that way. Yeah, right here. How many of you guys recognize this verse? I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. You guys heard that? Did you guys know that was directly connected to money? Directly. Go back up the verse in front of it. Verse 5. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have, for he himself said, boom, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. Direct connection to money. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What will man do to me? Let's go on and fill that in your bulletin. Next screen, we'll be able to look at the blanks there and see what you're filling in. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. So go through and ask yourself, do I love money? Am I in this problem? Am I drowning in debt because I've fallen in love with money? So ask yourself, am I free from the love of money? It's going to be your first problem to deal with. You got to learn how to be content with what you have. And the way you learn to be content with what you have is by remembering that God said, I won't leave you. I won't forsake you. All those times when the Israelites forsook God, God didn't forsake them. He didn't desert them. Nehemiah made note of that. Even in the times when God said, I'm giving up on you, he turned around and he had compassion on them. I'll never forsake you. Never leave you. We're filling in, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. And then the next blank. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper. Confidently say. You can underline that word confidently. Turn to your neighbor, say, the Lord is my helper. Ah, I hear it. You're saying it with confidence. The Lord is my helper. Say it to another neighbor. See, you need to be reminded of that. Because guys, I know way too well what being in debt is like. I am drowning in debt. And if I had time to share with you my story, I would. I don't mind at all being transparent. We've got a lot of money that's in debt. And I come from both sides of the fence. Some of it's because I've done some stupid things, because I've wanted some things that I couldn't afford, and I bought them on credit, and I did these things, and I never could pay it off, and it just kept growing. Some of it was unavoidable circumstances. One of the ministries I was involved in, we didn't make a lot of money. In order to survive, we had to take out some money on debt. We were buying groceries some months on the credit card. And so I've been on both of those. But the debt we have, it's tough. And I know the feeling there. I know the feeling. And it's not fun. It's not easy. But you need to be assured of this verse and to understand it is directly connected to money. God will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He will never desert you, no matter how. Because I know that feels lonely. And you're down in the depths of drowning in debt, and it feels so lonely. And a lot of us, we're hanging on to this huge stone, our idols, and it's what's taking us down to the bottom of the ocean. And God's like, let go of the stone, and you'll float. And we're all just hanging on. I remember when I went skiing once. And one of the first times I'd ever been skiing, they said, okay, when you fall, let go of the rope. And I'm like, duh, you're going to let go of the rope. Well, I fall, and you're hearing them through the water, you know, let go of the rope. And they're saying it like 50 times, and you're hearing like every other word, do what am I supposed to do? And that's how a lot of us are with debt. And we're hanging on to this thing that's killing us. And you need to listen. You need to cry out to God. You need to let go of the rope. You need to let go of the rock. You need to let go of that idol, the materialism. And you need to return to the understanding and the truth that God will not desert you. He will not leave you. He is your helper. You can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper.